Hi, and welcome to the Virtual Classroom Podcast. I'm your host, Kimberly Ring, and I'm so glad you're here. In the Virtual Classroom, I invite virtual teachers from across the country to sit down and talk to all of us about what it's like to be a virtual teacher. It is my hope that through our conversations, we can educate, collaborate, and of course, connect to build a tribe of virtual teachers. Thanks again so much for being here. Hey everyone, welcome back. Happy Memorial Day weekend. I just want to ask this quick question. Have you heard of project-based learning? I have, but it wasn't something I was taught in my undergrad. It's not something I've received a whole bunch of training on. I do remember doing like projects after like a novel or at the end of a unit in math or science, something or other. But project-based learning is the entire process. It's almost like its own teaching theory. And if you were to go to EBSCOhost and type in project-based learning, you're going to find a whole bunch of research on it proving how effective it is. Like design of learning process for promoting teamwork using project-based learning, project-based learning model to improve student ability, project-based learning, where's the other one, strategies and a proposal for local educational systems, integrating learning and project-based learning for projects, for engineering, project-based learning schools that are assessing more than just academic achievement. What I'm gathering is that this is a very powerful strategy and we're not doing enough of it. And so without further ado, I'd love for to introduce you to Rusty, who only does project-based learning for her agricultural class in Colorado. So without further ado, here's Rusty.
My name is Rusty Rousen, and I am a teacher at Destinations Career Academy of Colorado. Some people just refer to it as Destination. Some people call it, you know, CODECA. It's got all sorts of fancy names, but essentially we're a career-focused school. We have different career pathways. And within those pathways, you know, we have the focus for students to be able to kind of pick what they're passionate about or pick what they're interested in and then gain some accolades when they graduate, which is pretty cool to be able to get into the workforce. And myself, I actually come from a background in science. I actually am a science teacher and I also teach agriculture. I also am the lead teacher at the school and do some things with gifted and talented and a couple other hats as well. But I come from the world of science. I come from working in a lab and then I transitioned into teaching through those experiences. So kind of an interesting progression to be from science and then be teaching science. And so I like it a lot. I like teaching a lot. I like the students. I like our school.
So what did you, before you became a teacher, what did you study with your science?
So I looked at plant-insect interactions and molecular microbe interactions of plants while I was in graduate school. I worked in the lab there and some horticulture working with the greenhouses and things like that. So hence the teaching of some agriculture classes as well.
Absolutely. That totally makes sense because that's totally plants. And from the land of Oklahoma, that's a really relevant job. So I got recently learned that Oklahoma is like the number we produce. We're like in the top five states that produce wheat. So
yeah,
I kind of knew that, but then I thought we'd be higher, but anyway, it's definitely still relevant. So agriculture is one of the career paths. What are some of the other career paths that students can study?
So we also have the business pathway where they can look at different aspects of business. There's a lot of different classes in that pathway. We have the health pathway, the healthcare pathway. We have a teacher education pathway. We also have, I always get the name of it, I'm just going to call it the security pathway. It's the law enforcement pathway is the better way to say that. We have some IT pathways, one really more focusing on engineering and one focusing on that graphic aspect, more on computer design. You know, the things you think of like Photoshop and those kinds of things. And then next year, we're actually starting a pathway in security. So thinking a little bit more about, you know, security process. So that's kind of, and hospitality as well, actually. So we started with some base pathways, you know, all those kind of normal ones, engineering and ag, and then we're kind of expanding from there.
So what one's like the most, I don't know if you're aware of this. I definitely am, wouldn't be, but maybe you are. Do you know which one the kids most go to? Like which one's the most popular one that they're going to?
I would say that agriculture is probably one of the, agriculture and teaching is probably the least popular. And I think the teaching one, that makes sense to me. You know, you're either kind of the person that knows you wanted to be a teacher from the time you're a kid, or a lot of people like myself who kind of come to it later. That one makes sense to me. It's hard when you're in high school I want to be a teacher, unless you've always known you want to be a teacher. Agriculture, I think, kind of same feel. Like a lot of people assume that you have to live on a farm and be part of this whole, you know, community of farmers, and that you're wearing overalls, and it's really just not the case. And I think a lot of those misconceptions start to break down at the high school level, and that's part of what our pathway really does, is to try to realize that you can be doing cloning of plants, and you can be working in a lab, and you can be, you know, traveling if you want to travel, or you could be, you know, you could be a farmer, or you could be growing lettuce in Denver, downtown Denver, to, you know, to supply to all these fancy restaurants. And so I think though the misconception is still there that you have to be.
There's definitely some misconceptions, and it wasn't until recent years after high school where I learned that there's actually a really big science to agriculture and to just farming in general. It became a lot more interesting after learning that. I was like, oh, well, yeah, I could probably definitely get into that because I like science. But there's definitely that misconception.
And I think that's part of the reason that I love agriculture and the way I teach agriculture is that it is just an application of science for real. You're just using all of those plant things, all those animal things that you've learned, you know, when you talk about nitrogen and plants and cells, and, you know, you're using that to and really applying it to get your crops the best they can be, or to get the most fruit off of your crop, or to fertilize, or to deal with pests. And so I think a lot of students, once they catch on to that, they kind of go, oh, this is kind of cool, right? It's the hands-on aspect of all these other sciences. There's a lot of chemistry in it. There's a lot of biology, obviously. There's a lot of earth science. There's a lot of physics, even, you know, with hydronic, you know, water, you know, water usage and irrigation and all that stuff. It's a lot of physics as well. So it is really just a little bit of everything. To answer your question, I think that the other pathways are pretty even, I would say, you know, depending on personality type. I think that, you know, if you have that interest in engineering, or you have that interest in art or business, or, you know, some students really maybe want to do business and something else, and healthcare, of course, as well. But I think that's a little bit more even across the board.
Okay. Now, are all of these offered at every destination school? Do they have these, or is it kind of guided based on the talent of the teachers and the staff that you have that are able to teach that? Like, could I bring in a different mechanical or something like that if I had a mechanics degree? So how does that work?
So it's interesting because every state's a little bit different with what they require for the CTE pathways and if you're state approved. We are state approved for all of our pathways. Our agriculture pathway is a little bit different. We have an approval a little bit differently at a local school that is our authorizer. And so we have kind of a different relationship because of the requirements of the state. But all of our other pathways are state approved, which means that, you know, we get funding for those in a little bit different of a way based on CTE requirements. Teachers have to have a specific teaching certificate. So like I have an ag teaching certificate on top of my science certificate, the health teacher, you know, same thing. You have to have a separate certificate to teach those things. You have some other qualifications that you have to have with advisory committees. And so every state looks a little different, and every state's pathways are definitely a little bit different. Not every state can offer all these different pathways. We're really lucky in the sense that we have some really great teachers that are available to teach these things. A lot of states also might not have ag because they just don't have the interest. And so a lot of times it is very much, what do the students want? What did the population want? You know, in Arkansas looks way different than what we look like in Colorado based on that population.
Okay. So, and who is open to this? Like, so is this like middle school through high school, or what grade levels can be a part of this?
Yeah, that's a great question. And that also, I would say that for the most part, you want to spark interest in middle school. You know, our middle school students all take career exploration classes. I actually taught those these past year, and they got a little bit of, all the teachers got to teach a little bit, you know, a couple weeks of what their pathway was about, do some fun activities with them, get them really thinking about, you know, what they like. And before that, then we did a lot of personality testing, you know, inter-career interest surveys, got them reflecting a lot on what they wanted to do, some projects that they wanted, you know, just to kind of pull it together so that they get the exposure so that they can start to go, man, that's really cool. I never knew about that. And that was one of my favorite things that students would say was, I had no idea that this was even an option. And so I think middle school, a lot of times it really is just to get them, get their feet wet, right? They're doing so much self-discovery at that age. It's such an interesting age and they have all that energy. And so carrying that from middle school to high school is really essential, but having them as a freshman be like, I know I love this topic. That gives a freshman some power. That gives them some confidence. And also absolutely, if you start as a freshman, the opportunities that could come when you're a sophomore, a junior, and you've already have some classes under your belt and like you're looking for internships or you want to start participating in competitions, right? Every one of our pathways has a student organization that goes with it. So you start to compete and then, you know, it just, it opens that world, I think, to the high schooler a little bit earlier from being involved in middle school. And that does look different, you know, but for every middle school, sorry. No, rambling.
No, I love it. So you mentioned a lot of things, and I'm trying to think where to, because it sparked a lot of I'm a curious person. I have lots of questions. I gotta decide which one do I want to ask first. So I want definitely talk about those competitions. I love to compete. And then also want to just, so before I go there, I guess I want to know, is this kind of like a trade school? Like, do they graduate with a trade, or I'm trying to wrap my brain around it.
Yeah. I think that that's the best way to kind of make the analogy, is that it is kind of that model of maybe the trade school. It isn't, because we are a virtual school, but there are a lot of hands-on opportunities. There's a lot of project-based learning going on, and students do get on their diplomas a seal of what pathway was, I don't know that, correct, the designation of pathway. It's on their transcripts as well. And so it becomes evident to either colleges they're applying for, to employers, that they could be like, hey, I have this expertise, you know, in this field. I do have, you know, some experience that other students coming out of high school might not have. Our goal though is every one of our teachers that are teaching courses do have work-based learning opportunities for students. And so that is driven by the student, that's driven by what they need and what they want, by their class. And but that is that hands-on component or whatever that might be, you know, looking to get them some of that practical application as well. So that's really student driven though.
Yeah. So how does that work for you? Like in your class, how do you do these project-based learning and hands-on activities for your kids?
Yeah. So you know, it's one of those things that I think that teachers for a long time, you know, you do these things and then you kind of reward students with a project. And so it would be, you know, we're going to do this project after we learn about this stuff. And project-based learning really takes all of that teaching and learning, and puts it kind of in the student's corner in a way that the teacher is more of a facilitator. And so really, it's just an integration of all of that. It's student-centered. It is definitely approaching the topic, starting with, you know, just really getting them to kind of think about it from a real world point of view. Really, we usually start with some sort of a scenario, or we start with some sort of, you know, like I might send a letter from the national park that says that they want to learn about, you know, how to control their weeds outside of, you know, on their trails, and they don't want to use these approaches, and they have to figure out, you know, can you write a proposal that would, you know, that your company, we would hire a company to, you know, to deal with these weeds potentially. And so it's really integrated in kind of this real world approach into not just content, quiz, do a project about it. It's really just, you know, how do we integrate all of this? How do we investigate it? How do we engage in this authentic problem where we get to question, challenge ourselves, and rely on each other collaboratively? So I really like project-based learning. I think it's great for these kinds of courses that are really an integration, especially agriculture, of all of these sciences, right? And it's hard to just teach this and this and this and piecemeal it all. But you do teach within that, you know, depending on where you meet your students where they're at, right? And so you can, you know, you can kind of evaluate them of like, what are they not getting? Do they know anything about fertilizers? Do they know anything about, you know, dispersion of seeds? And if they don't, let's go in and kind of work that in of like, hey, you have to attend a one-day training on dispersion of seeds in order to get this information, you need to write this proposal. And so working it in, I mean, it's like a giant role-playing scenario or role play, you know, in my mind, this project-based learning, you know, just like Dungeons and Dragons, right? That's why it's so popular. So that's the way that, you know, that I feel like a lot of teachers are approaching this. And this is something that K-12 has really dedicated a lot of the team to as well, of really digging into these CTE courses and making them all project-based, which is really cool.
I love that. And so how I'm imagining this is kind of like a video game when you just throw these kids into Minecraft story mode and they have to build, and you're kind of just watching them to see, well, do they know anything about Minecraft, and intervening.
That's really actually a great visual, and probably a connection that most people have as well, where, you know, some of those students are going to be jumping in, they're going to be doing things that you're like, whoa, I don't even know how to do that, right? And then there's other students, you're going to have to teach them how to use the controller. And so the cool thing about project-based learning is that, you know, if you have your grouping right and you have your collaboration working really well, the students that are going, that already know how to do all that will hopefully be helping the students that need that controller work, or they can be giving them tips and tricks, or they can be guiding the project. And so you have a natural differentiation that happens in this process. And you also, as a teacher, you have to be constantly, you know, just reflecting on where are they at. But on the flip side, the students have to be constantly reflecting, where am I at with this? And I think that process of just that reflective learner is something that changes you, you know, and changes your approach, the way that you see the world personally. I mean, that might sound a bit like grandiose, but I am a huge fan and see huge outcomes of students when they're like, and they just start to recognize their own behavior, their own learning styles. They start to recognize when they need help and how they communicate and what their strengths are and what their weaknesses are, or what they know they need more support with, you know, the way we support it, not the weakness, but it's where you need more support and where you know that. And when you start to recognize those things about yourself, you can drive yourself to places you never thought you'd get.
Absolutely. So with that all in mind, I'm assuming you do Class Connects just like mm-hmm. everybody else. So what does that typically look like? And within a project base. So what's like the structure? What do you do? What do they do? How does that?
Yeah. So project-based learning is kind of, I always think of it as like a fun little like spiral slide, you know, where like it's not very linear. Oftentimes you're kind of looping back around and you might be seeing the same thing you saw before. And it's kind of interesting because there is though a lot of kind of continuity for the way that you approach this, right? And so you definitely want to integrate all those things, like the reflection we were talking about, collaboration, student voice, and choice as well, right? I think students have to have buy-in. I think these things have to be real world, realistic. Oftentimes, you know, we try to pick things that are connected to their community, and in turn, also trying to get the community involved in their projects. But at the same time, I think, you know, there is a flow. So you kind of start with this kind of scenario, or you start with some sort of, you know, setup, right? And then there's a lot of just questioning that goes into that, finding out where the students are at, and then kind of moving them through into a way where they have an outcome. And that outcome can look different for, you know, depending on what you're looking at. It can be a full report, like that example I gave you about the National Parks weeds control. It could be a presentation to a town hall. It could be a whole multitude of different kinds of things. And so I think that is important to know too, that it isn't always just ending in some sort of like PowerPoint, right? But you do, you know, you have to have them inquiring for sure constantly throughout, and keeping them engaged throughout that as well can be a challenge. And that's where, when they pick what they want and they have a voice and they have a choice and they are revising and reflecting, they just kind of, they start to move with it, right? They have that buy-in. And I think that that's key. So I'm not actually sure I answered your question, but maybe.
No, well, so let me just say how I think it, so you did, and I guess let me reflect back to you to make sure I got right. So what I imagine is when you go into your class, you pose this problem, and they have to then like choose. For me, as an elementary school teacher, I think I would, at the beginning stages, I'd have like some choices on my board, like an essay or a PowerPoint or something or other, you know, whatever that goes with that. Let them choose, and then probably ask the question, okay, well, how are you going to solve this problem? And based on how they answer, that would help me know, okay, they don't know about fertilizer, like you said earlier. Let me gather some resources and let them research about fertilizer and then check in with them. Is that kind of
accurate? Yeah. And I think too, as a teacher, you know, the first place you start is with your standards. What do I need them to know from this project? What's my goals, right? What skills, right? We call them 21st century skills, or you can call them soft skills, or you can call them teamwork skills, whatever those are. You know, what skills do you want them to get out of this? Hopefully it's a little bit of everything on those 21st century skills. And then you set up a driving question. And so this is where really you set up the, you know, you kind of set up those learning goals. Like, these are the goals that you have, right? And then you kind of think about what's the outcome, right? Starting with the end in mind. So what outcome do you want them to have? And so, you know, like, the course of learning can look different. You know, student A, it might look way different than student B. You know, like we were talking about, like, that one student A might need to learn to use the controller in your Minecraft example, where student B might not have those same kinds of questions and might be driving something else of like, how do I create a server for Minecraft, you know? And so there's a lot of responsibility and autonomous kind of learning that goes in there. And then you kind of, yeah, you use a lot of reflection and questioning to kind of see where are students at, right? Okay. Okay. No one knows the definition of, you know, I don't know. I can't think of anything Minecrafty, but, you know, no one knows the definition of what a micronutrient is. And so we need to talk about that. And so we integrate some lessons into that. You know, then, you know, there's all that teamwork and critical thinking. How do we do this? You know, there's checkpoints there, especially for maybe the younger students or students that have never had project-based learning, maybe putting a few extra, you know, layers in there for that scaffolding. And then just kind of moving forward with it, having a lot of checkpoints, a lot of reflection, and then getting to the point where you can kind of give them, you know, that revision feedback where that they can finally have that outcome, that whatever you decided based on your driving question, based on your goals, based on, you know, all those standards you need them to meet, and then bam, they hit that, you know, that outcome. And so, you can already tell from the way that you talk about project-based learning, and sometimes teachers go, what do I do? What do I do in the middle? What do I do? And that can be the tricky part, is that you have to be, you know, assessing. And I have to say, you know, as a teacher, it's easy to just prep something, you know, the week before, the night before. And I feel like project-based learning, you just can't do that. You have to set it up in a way that really you have that whole idea ready to go. And you because you have to be constantly tweaking along the way. So that's also different. You know, we know teachers are the kind of the kings and queens of, you know, getting stuff done last minute because there's so much on the plate.
We've got a lot to do.
And project-based learning forces you to kind of have a paradigm shift, in my opinion, at least, to seeing that big picture and having it all laid out, you know, more than just the outline or the lesson plan kind of outline, you know? So.
Yeah, it sounds like you have to start at have some backward thinking of this end project where you want them to be, and then a lot of like, okay, well, how can I scaffold them to this point? And on that note, you said that, you know, us teachers might not want, you know, to do that, which makes sense because I just did a Google trend search on project-based learning, and it's declining. So people aren't searching this very often. However, it's very popular in Zimbabwe, and it's very popular in Hawaii. So, but United States as a whole is at like number five of states that are researching it. But so with that in mind, but there's also a lot of scholarly research proving that project-based learning is a game changer. It's very relevant. It's very powerful, just like you've been talking about. So knowing that teachers are kind of like, you know what, not, I know this is awesome, but it sounds like a lot of work, as you mentioned. How could you, what would you say to those teachers to help change their mind, or what information would you give them to kind of make it easier and not so, I don't know where to begin?
I mean, honestly, it's one of those things that it is tough when you first start this, and it is challenging as a teacher, and you get pushed because you don't get taught to teach like this for the most part, I would say. And it's like you said, there's not
as much.
Yeah, I was
definitely not taught how to do project-based learning in college.
And it's hard to go to your coworkers and be like, hey, I'm doing this project-based learning thing. What do you think? And they'll be like, I don't know, I just do a project. You know, there's a lot of misconception between the idea of a project and project-based learning. But I think once you start seeing the way that students engage and the outcomes that they're putting out, you just go, wow, this is amazing. And like you said, there's a lot of evidence out there to support that, especially under-resourced students that, you know, have been moved around a lot, or they have unstable home lives or areas that are a little bit more challenged than others, really respond to it as well, because it is real world. It feels like you're connecting to something real. And it doesn't have that, when am I ever going to use this? You're using it, right? You're using these math skills, even if you don't teach math. You're using your writing skills because you have to communicate, you know, via email or whatever it might be, via these reports. Those things matter. And so they start to see all of these connections, and they make their own connections. But they also work in teams. And not every project is team-based. You can do these things individually. Oftentimes, I think that having that for confidence building and process and all of that is not necessarily a bad thing. But for the most part, I would say these things are team building as well. And that, you know, we all connect to a community very well. We all want to be a community. And so students that aren't used to that, or maybe, you know, you just connect to students or to each other in a whole different way as well. And so I think some of the success comes from that. But it's kind of exciting, and it's one of those things where they're like, they feel like they can take on the world, you know, a little bit.
Absolutely. I mean, if I was kind of taught how to make this presentation, that's going to definitely give me a leg up when I leave wherever I'm at, knowing that I can do something like that.
Yeah.
I was actually collaborating earlier with a teacher. I made just like a virtual zoo, and she's like, it's inspired me to travel the world with my kids next year. And then we were collaborating on how we, she was thinking, I'm going to do a separate class connect because it's not academic related. And I was like, no, we could somehow integrate reading into this. They could read
about.
So I'm thinking we were on the lines of somewhere of going to that project-based learning. I guess what advice would you have for me with that? How could I make that a project-based learning if we're wanting to like travel the world and see other places? And my idea was for them to then write a report on either the places they've been or argue which places they should go, like you see on like on Pinterest, like top places to visit on your next vacation. How could I introduce this as a project-based learning, just I guess to make that relevant to my world or someone that's not in science, maybe ELA or you know.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think, you know, all these kind of ideas just jumped in my head. Like you could have a pamphlet for like, how do you take care of your giraffe in Colorado? Cause we have Cheyenne Mountain Zoo here and they have giraffes. But how does that change if you're in Boston or if you're in San Diego? Like how do you have, does giraffe care change? You know, you could get it very specific to one animal. Or how do zoos manage that? You could have them write an actual, you know, like they could create their own zoo, create their own zoo, you know? And so they could start their own zoo and maybe they're going to start the zoo around the world. Or you could just have them, like you said, like top zoos around the world. And, you know, you maybe they're hired as like a zoo professional that you need to rate all these zoos in the world. And they're hired as this zoo professional. And then you take, you know, they have to go around the world and they have to learn about what does it take to have a zoo? You know, how do you learn about the animals? And then they have to, at the end, their outcome would be, you know, like you said, like writing up a little guide of the top 10 zoos in the world, you know, according to, and then they're the author, you know? And then they have this little like travel book that's their outcome, which is really cool because there's a lot of websites that will publish those for free as well. So then they could actually have their own travel guide. How cool would that be? Or their zoo guide or whatever it is, you know? And so I think it really, you know, same thing. Like you just have to know what standards do I want them to really meet, right? Reading, writing, evaluating, maybe even nonfiction because they're going to be reading about animal care, zoo care, other countries, right? A lot of nonfiction, which we know is important. And then, you know, you just kind of work them through that. They all get a letter that they've been selected to, you know, evaluate these zoos around the world and then write up this little like zoo guide, you know, and then you just kind of work them through it. What does it mean to write this? How do you write it? Sentence structure, whatever it might be, pictures, you know, and you just kind of scaffold like you would a lesson, maybe over the course of, who knows, that might take 2 months, you know, I don't even know. You go on your zoo tours and you check them out and they reflect and they evaluate and then they rank them all and write it up, you know.
I love that. So yeah, that kind of led me to my next question. How long, when you do these project-based learning, how long is a normal project?
You know, it is just student-dependent, honestly. And it's also project-dependent, you know, your zoo project might look different than if I'm having students, you know, completely design a farm, you know, where they have to have budgets and all of these things. And also, you know, like we always know as teachers, we have to meet students where they're at. And so sometimes you get in there and you're like, they don't have any background information, right? They don't know, how do I expect them to have this outcome if they don't know how to do it? They don't even know the vocabulary. And so you realize that you have to really start to backbeat a little bit more. You have to fill in those blanks. You have to have a little bit more information being disseminated to them. And that could take 2 months or that could take 2 weeks or it could take, you know, a whole semester depending on where your students are at and their levels of reading and writing and math and all of that, you know, it just depends on your outcome. But I know, and you start to see this with project-based learning as like, it's kind of dependent and that's tough sometimes, you know, when you have to get through curriculum and you have to hit these testing standards and we have to, you know, like all of these things. But you know, when you're integrating so much into these projects, you can do it. You can cover a lot of curriculum. You can cover a lot of standards in these projects, you know, if that makes sense. And so I think it starts to feel a little daunting, of like, I got to cover all this. But honestly, you can cover so much when you're doing these projects.
Absolutely. And think we also did like a road trip type thing. And I think we're close to project-based learning without actually doing project-based learning. But I think we could have made it project-based learning, where we like measured the distance of the different cities we went to, how much the hotel cost, and how many movies we could watch during this time on the iPad. Like we could have probably taken it even cooler if I had just known, I had just had talked to you beforehand. So,
and you know, not every project-based learning project has to be this epic thing either. You know, they don't have to be.
I spent a lot of time talking during that, and I could have handed over the reins and let them.
Yeah.
And so I think that's where I'm a millennial, so I really struggle with handing over the reins. And I'm also, that's not how I was taught to teach.
Right.
And so what I'm keep telling myself is that I'm teaching, me personally, I'm teaching to a generation that knows how to create a Minecraft world. And they know how to go onto YouTube and research whatever they're wanting to build in this Minecraft world, or, you know, whatever. And I'm still over here doing like, hey, this is step one, step two. And that's not how they work.
Right. And I think you just nailed it. I mean, you know, we know that direct instruction is very efficient, you know, based on data and based on lots of research and teaching. But I'm not necessarily sure it's always students' favorite, you know. And so, like you said, they know how to do a lot of this. They know how to, you know, ask someone that they're talking to on whatever game server for advice or whatever it might be. And so they naturally kind of fall into this, you know. And it is different. You know, if you have a kid in a project-based learning class, it is different than, you know, another class. And so sometimes you have to make sure that you kind of have to teach them how to make sure they advocate for themselves, which is powerful, you know.
I think that's where I'm struggling. I'm doing a lot of things right, but there's a lot of things I'm not doing quite right yet, and I'm still learning.
And there's some really great resources out there. Like I said, K-12, you know, they have a whole team that actually designs these courses now. All of the CTE courses are all project-based. They actually train us all, teachers, you know, for some project-based training. I do a lot of reading. I've project based in the book and mortar before I started teaching online as well. There's textbooks out there you can find that are actually project based books, especially for science. I don't know so much about the other, but maybe, you know, and so it's kind of interesting because I think that it is out there, like you said, and people that know about it, but it's not necessarily something that's integrated into all teaching development. You know?
But I mean, it does sound like 21st century. And
if you think about it, I mean, Mythbusters is all just project based.
Yeah.
Learning, right?
Like, they love Mythbusters.
They love it. Yeah.
We're so disappointed when they.
Yeah. All of those kinds of things that kids really like are all just project based. You know, like if Adam and Jamie don't, you know, they start with what they want to do. They have a question, you know, is this going to be busted and whatever it is. And they fill out back information based on it. They do trials. They do reflections. Well, this isn't going to work. So we need this. Somebody else did this. Let's do this. And then they test it and they build it and they have an outcome. And they make it look really easy because they've been doing those things for their whole lives.
Like over 30 years combined experience, whatever.
And you can see in that show, you know, they have the big projects and they have those little ones that all the, you know, the other people, Tori and those guys all do. And so it's interesting because those are much smaller and they're much more tangible and, you know, they fill the time on air, but honestly, they're just small versions of that.
Absolutely. And then there's that new Netflix show called like 100 Humans, which is basically the same thing. And I really was upset that I didn't know about the show because I would love to be one of the 100 humans doing all these different little trials. I would love to be like human number 13. Like that would be awesome. But okay, so one last question before I let you go. Going back to those competitions, I don't know if you've been a part of K-12, or I've only been with K-12 for 5 years, but we used to do like competitions when I first started here, like called the Oscars, and now we don't have those, and I really miss them. So how did those work with your kids?
So each of our pathways, because we are state approved, and once again, this goes back to some of those kind of interesting, you know, state approvals for career academies and career classes. But for the most part, almost all the students in these pathways are definitely signed up for Skills USA, which is a student-centered organization for the IT pathways and mostly the IT pathway. So engineering and, you know, the graphics, they do a lot of speech writing and evaluation. Healthcare pathway has HOSA, which is the healthcare organization student pathway. Then there's FBLA for business. There is FFA for agriculture. There is FCCLA for education and some of those kinds of things. And so
I heard of those last two.
Okay. Yeah. And so those are very much organizations that this is all that they do. So students compete in different kind of activities. You know, some of them are writing, some of them are career development skills, some of them are leadership skills, and they come together at, you know, the regional level, the state level, to do competitions and to kind of drive that. They also have a lot of conferences on leadership, those kinds of things. And so, for example, in FFA, we really have two divisions. We have career development skills and leadership skills. And the career development skills are evaluating livestock and floriculture and vet skills, you know, all these things that are very much the skills you need to be in this specific topic, you know, where the leadership skills are much more the speaking and the, you know, a lot of the parley pro and things, or you're reciting some of the traditions of FFA and you're kind of in that. And everybody in FFA has their jacket. Skill USA, they all have their jackets, you know, they
jackets.
Yeah. So, you know, it's kind of iconic. Once again, it's that community feel. They get to meet a lot of really interesting people in their field. They get to kind of talk to each other about something they're interested in, which I think for kids, you know, it's easy to get caught up in what's popular and what's fashionable, but it's nice for them to be talking about things that are school related or topic related, you know, getting into, you know, talking about healthcare topics if you're a healthcare pathway person, or talking about, you know, mechanics if you're into that. And so it gives them a way to kind of start to have some professional support and also to make those connections, you know, which we all know that connections lead to those opportunities in life. Well, I know somebody's uncle that knows somebody, or I met this guy at a conference that, you know, those kinds of things matter for sure. So it gives
absolutely
them the
absolutely they do. Yeah. Absolutely. And I love hearing that K-12 is still involved in those things. I don't know why I thought we weren't. I guess because I'm in elementary land and I don't hear about that. So, but I remember I wasn't in FFA, but most of my school was, because
yeah,
I live in the middle of Oklahoma. So of course we're going to be a part of that.
Yeah.
My husband went to like the national conferences almost every year, and he sold the most blue and gold sausage products, 1 year's top salesman for the FFA at his school. Sold
exactly.
to one person, and she bought, anyway, it's a still funny story that I hear fairly frequently. So
yeah.
I love and you that can kids imagine, are still doing those things.
Yeah, and as you can imagine, if you are an 18-year-old that sold all these sausages, and you're going to apply for a job, and you're the only kid that sold all the, you're like the top salesman, and all your other, you know, people applying for this job don't have that experience, you're going to get that job. And I think that is really the key for these.
That's how he got his current
CTSOs,
job.
These pathways. Yeah. I mean, really, like, yeah.
I'm just kidding. It's not.
It really gives kids a leg up. It gives them that something else. And it also lets them get some accolades for some of their academic work outside of school as well. So,
absolutely. Well, Rusty, it was so amazing to talk to you. I learned so much. Before I let you go, is there anything that we didn't talk about, but you were hoping that we would, or something you just want to mention, anything like that?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. Well,
I mean, I think,
go ahead.
I think that, you know, I think project-based learning is really the wave of the future. And that sounds kind of a little bit cliche and maybe a little bit like, you know, optimistic in a far-fetched way. But I think that, you know, with the data and you start digging, you start seeing what places like New York's doing, and, you know, some of these colleges are really taking this on. I think that it really is something that kids get into, and it really is something that that I feel like that they're proud of, and I feel like they have a connection to it in a way that they don't, you know, just some worksheet that they do or some assignment that they do, you know. And I think that it gives them that relevance that a lot of kids need to succeed.
And that's so true, because I'm, as you say that, I'm thinking about when I was in high school in Spanish, we made movies. Like, we would record ourselves speaking these, like, these famous Star Wars lines in Spanish. And I still remember that. Like, but I don't remember anything that I did in English class other than this big project we had to do at the end of our senior year of compiling, like, a scrapbook of our entire lives. But you're right. I remember the projects that we did. I don't.
Yeah. And I think if you ask anybody, they remember those things that you do that are just, that there's a connection. It becomes relevant to their lives. It becomes something they're interested in. And like you said, I don't remember a whole handful of, like, weird stuff that I did in high school, but I remember this debate I did that was, like, intense, and we had to dress up, and, you know, and it was like this whole huge thing, you know. And so I think if you ask a lot of people, they start to, they pull up all those things, but never the worksheet they had to do.
Absolutely.
The kind of time filler type stuff, you know, so.
Which I think is like a good scaffolding too, but you're right. We're not going to remember those, but the projects are.
Yeah, and I think it's important to know that you could integrate a lot of that into your project. You could be doing things that are those things to check for understanding, but they aren't really the outcome, you know? And a lot of times those things are the outcome. No one likes to just do that.
Absolutely.
No one likes to do that. I don't like to do that, you know?
My son's worksheets go straight into the trash. Like, I look over him, yep, you did good. Trash. Okay. So,
yeah, which is we want those, you
really
know,
sad to say that his work was trash.
Yeah.
When it shouldn't be. So,
right.
Yeah. Shouldn't be. Well, Rusty, thank you so much for coming on. You're an incredible human being and doing amazing things with your kids. And thank you for sharing your insight and wisdom with me and hopefully a whole bunch of other listeners. And we'll hopefully collaboratively work together and with our teams and try to implement at least one project-based learning project next school year. And hopefully that will just keep adding on and on until that's all we're doing. So
thanks for having me on. I love talking about teaching and strategies and stuff as well. And like, if you need anything, let me know, you know, like, reach out to me, or if anybody, I mean, I don't want to be like, everybody listening, you know, email me, because I don't want to be inundated with emails. But, you know, if somebody needs support, reach out to me. You know, I'm at Destinations Career Academy of Colorado. And my last name is Robison, R-O-B-I-S-O-N, not Robinson. So that one gets crossed. The wires get crossed a lot.
Yeah, people always think I'm saying green instead of ring. They're like, green, yeah. Miss Green. I'm like, what even word is that? No, Miss Green. That's actually a word.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much again. Well, and you have a phenomenal day. I appreciate you.
All right. Thanks so much. Talk to you soon.
Bye. So I don't know about you, but I now just want to go make some project-based learning. That's what I want to do this summer, is make some units over, like, main idea in supporting detail, summarizing, writing a main idea paragraph, writing an opinion. And that includes, like, fact and opinion and some other aspects, some other standards that definitely could be incorporated into one project-based unit that meets them right where they're at. It could be something along the lines with, like, Roblox or Minecraft or some other video game, because they love that. But what about you? What do you want to do now? Where you want to meet your kids? Because I've had this conversation before. I've had this conversation before about how we're not meeting our students where they are and how they learn. And for some reason, I keep falling back into how I learn and how I was taught to teach. And that's not who I am. I want to be innovating. I want to meet my students where they're at. I want it to be student-centered. And after talking to Rusty, I realized this is the answer that I was looking for. Yes, I knew the problem. I knew there was an issue, but I didn't know the answer and project based it. So I don't know about you, but next year, that's what I want to do. That's how I want to teach. So this summer, that's what I'm hoping to do. And it's also my hope to make like a folder, like a Google Drive or something like that, where we can put our units in there, maybe together. Because as Rusty said, this is something that takes some front loading. It's not something that we can just like plan on the fly. And so maybe coming together and sharing our units might go a long way in helping all of our students. And even if you're like high school or middle school and I'm elementary, maybe you could adapt the problem to your kid's level, right? Maybe it can be easily adaptable so you're not having to start from scratch, right? So, you know, to each their own. But the point is that having something is always better than nothing, right? So what do you want to accomplish this next school year? How do you want to use project-based learning next year after listening to this episode? Head on over to social media and find the post about this episode and share your thoughts, share your ideas, share your experiences. What have you done? What resources do you use? What books have you read about project-based learning? I can't wait to hear all of those ideas. Thank you so much for tuning in. Have a great rest of your day. And as always, be brave, take a risk, but most of all, have fun. Bye, guys.